This is Laura Lee White, and my name is Barbara Lee. And we're going to be talking tonight a little bit about the changings of life, options and choices. It started out that we were conversing early one morning about the different changes that had occurred in our own lives. And we were thinking about the fact that when we go from childhood to young adulthood, and then we leave school and either go on to further school or to marriage, you go from being single to coupled, and from some people from being coupled to being single again, for whatever the reason. There are all kinds of separations in life, not only by death or divorce, but separations from jobs and friends and family, separations by retirement, moving from your home to apartments or whatever. A lot of changes, my disability, whatever. All these kinds of changes give us options for which we make choices. And I guess what we had been talking about, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that what we do with them, what we do with those options that are presented to us through the forced changes, are what really are important. You want to talk about choices, options?
Okay. A little background on myself, basically following through life with a childhood at home and going to college and moving back home and then working and then getting married and having a family and being young and buying a house and moving out to the suburbs. And living through that and moving throughout the state of Washington, and then when I was 36, my husband died. And so we were in Wenatchee at that time, and that then was quite a striking life change. I had never planned to raise children alone, but I continued to do that, and we stayed in Wenatchee. My children are now raised, and they're 20 and 23, and we survived, and we had many different changes along the way. During the span of time of raising my children alone, I also started a class at the Methodist Church. It was a study of Alfred North Whitehead, who is a mathematician and a theologian from England. And his idea is that God and you are in a pact together to bring about choices and options in your life. And there are possibilities that are being offered by God quicker than you can snap your fingers. So there are options, choices, possibilities, and innumerable experiences that can happen in a lifetime. So for 7 years, a study group and myself have been studying these thinkings of Alfred North Whitehead. It is being interpreted for us by my friend, who is a Methodist minister psychologist, and between my friend Bob and Alfred North Whitehead is a man named John Cobb, who has interpreted Alfred North Whitehead. It's a bit difficult to understand, and so to bring it down onto our level, we need to have spent this 7 year span of time studying this. I am a firm believer in choices, that whether you are offered whatever it is, there are choices that can be made, and the fact of not even making a choice is making a choice. So as we go along in our lives, even though there are those of us who will say, I've never made a choice of my own, or I did it that way because I couldn't make a choice, or whatever, you are making choices whenever there is a possibility happening for you or an option. And as Barbara mentioned, it, I guess, is what is the bottom line, or what is important here as the experiences are coming along. And after the death of my husband, it was a crisis that, of course, I'd never faced before, and I had a great deal of difficulty facing at first, but as the time progressed, And even though it was hard to live and there were difficulties that took place, I realized that the bottom line was, what is important here? The fact that this is a learning experience that's happening to me. What can I do with this experience? This is also something when I realized that the old cliche, this too shall pass, was brought into the fore very, very often. And the experience of realizing that this was going to be an experience and an adventure as we went along, and that God and I were dealing with this together. For in this study of process theology, it is that God and I are creating my life together. And so as we're in this constant companionship, together working, deciding where am I going from here, what am I going to learn from this, and what is going to be the outcome. So a little bit of that is that there were times when I only dealt with minutes, there were times when I only dealt with hours, and there were also times when I dealt with getting dressed in the morning and asking just for the strength and the ability to make it home and sit down in the same chair. And so as I progressed through, those were given to me.
I think for all of us, when there are changes and stresses that are difficult, we can do any number of things with them. I was sharing with Laura Lee the other evening that it was some over 20 years ago that I was married and shortly thereafter divorced, which is not always difficult, not always easy. I'm one of those people for whom it was devastating. And so I gained 70 pounds, which I have never lost in 20 years. But once that is over, then you have to pick up the pieces and proceed. When we lost our child, for those of you who know what it's like to lose a child, it's very difficult. Laura Lee lost the husband, and for me it was something different. When I lost my hearing, that's another kind of loss that one doesn't exactly say, well, hurrah, a new day, let's go on. It's a little more difficult than that. And for me, the first 5 years weren't bad, but years 6, 7, and 8 have been horrendous. It's almost the delayed reaction. But the point is not what happened, but what Laura Lee has done with her life, what you people have done with yours, and what I have done with whatever kinds of disappointments or difficulties or crises have come in life. And I think what we have to look at is what is important and what do we do? Do we let them get us down? Or do we try to find within them some kind of learning experience so that we can proceed onward? I can remember going back to graduate school after the time of my divorce. That was years and years and years ago. And it was the hardest thing I could do. I remember the first night in class, the day of the divorce per se. Went back to class, drove all the way. It was 80 miles away from where I had been during the day. Got there, was still wearing my wedding band. Noticed I had it on, reached to take it off. It was the first night of class, we were filling in forms, and the man looked at me and he saw it was still in the days when you have to write your marital status. He saw the word divorce that I had checked, which about killed me to do it. And he looked and he said, divorced woman, you must be a loose woman. Oh. That's all I needed. I got up and I walked out. Fortunately, I had a professor who followed me home that night after class, brought his wife and sat and we visited for hours. Okay, it's what we do with what we have. picking up, even if we don't want to, and going on and trying to make the best of what we can. But the one thing I have always known is that God is there, and that, if I may use the female pronoun, her arms have surrounded me, and that I know that I am not alone. There are times when we have to lean on people, when we want to lean on people, and it's okay. And I think we have to allow ourselves that option to not only to reach out, but this afternoon I was feeling kind of queasy, and I went over to Laurelie and I said, "Can I have a hug?" And I got one. But sometimes you just need to do that, and that's okay. In whatever the situation is, we might find ourselves. What kind of experiences have you all had? And where you have had to make choices? We all have options, whether to go or to dig a hole and crawl in. Would anybody like to share some experiences of maybe some crises, or the crises of people that you know, and ways that have been helpful in dealing with them?
Barb? We moved a lot, and moved from Iowa to Kansas and then back to Minnesota. Yeah, we had been gone for about 8 years. And our move from the University of Minnesota to Ames was just a stepping stone, and then we moved to Kansas. And I knew that because my husband had gone back to school, that this was all kind of adventure and not so permanent. But we lived in Ames for 4 years, in Manhattan, Kansas for 5, and then moved back to Minnesota, which is our home state. Expected to really like being back in Minnesota. But we went from university towns to a small town in the middle of Minnesota. And it was a very difficult year for me because we moved back in March to a lot of snow, and we had very few neighbors, and we had moved from a real cozy neighborhood in Kansas where people were really friendly, and Mark had walked to school, and now when we moved to Minnesota he had to get on a bus, and Anne was 3 and Laura was 5 weeks old, and so we were really, and our house wasn't completed, and I don't know, I just thought, are we going to be here the rest of our life? It just seemed so desolate because the few neighbors we had all worked. So I looked at empty houses all day, and it was a real hard, the first year in Staples was hard for me. I cried a lot and thought this was the end of the world, I think. But the turning point came. We went to meetings at Pullman, Washington, good for Washington, and I heard a professor give a slide presentation about that particular county, and he just made the comment that that part of Washington wasn't that exciting compared to some other parts, but that he and his son, who wanted a motorcycle badly, had gone out and explored that county, and they'd found some interesting things, and that's what his program was about. But he made one statement, and that was sort of a turning point for me, an adjustment. He said, once you become attuned to a place, you begin to like it, and that helped me, because I thought, I've got to get attuned to Staples, Minnesota, and I did, and maybe the time was right too, but that statement really hit me just right and helped me a lot. And
thanks for sharing that, Joy. I think also in seeing a number of seniors in the village this week, of what one of my 85-year-old friends told me. She had lived in her home for years and years and years, and finally couldn't take care of it any longer and dreaded moving into a high rise or into a nursing home. And finally she fell and broke her ankle and was forced to move because she simply couldn't stay alone and where she was on her own. And now she has moved into a high rise and she says, I can sit in my chair and look out hours after hour after hour and just simply enjoy it. I feel the relief of something new and different, and it was a choice I was forced to make, and now I'm so grateful. But was she forced to make it? What are the options? What are the choices? We make choices, as Laura Lee says, by not making choices as well as by actively making them. And the point is, how can we make those crises in our lives work on our behalf?
Since I'm on crutches, I think it was in 79, I had hand surgery. And I couldn't maneuver a wheelchair around home, so I went to a nursing home for a week. And I gained from that week at the nursing home because I deal, a lot of times I'm working with a nursing home program now. I was working in the area of gerontology and have used my experiences, and it's been marvelous. I wouldn't have traded that 1 week in a nursing home for anything. And it was, came in on a Friday. Sunday I had an opportunity to go to church it was a Holden presentation. And so the pastor came and got me, and I can remember how excited I was, bustling around in my room, cleaning up, getting ready to go. And I had just entered the nursing home on Friday, and this was Sunday. So it's interesting, the experiences I had, I've really been able to use it.
What are some of the crises in life for which we always have options, but what for which we must make choices? What are some of the significant ones?
Possibly whether to retire from your work or not.
Indeed.
If you have a choice.
Indeed. Indeed. And what are some of the fears about retirement?
Very many.
There are many. Financial. What am I going to do to keep busy? Am I going to get along with my spouse 24 hours a day? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Too much togetherness.
Do we still have anything in common?
I think also personal value. What will my value be when I retire? If indeed I haven't found anything else along the way to fulfill me. Mm-hmm. And can I allow myself to feel okay because I'm not bringing in a wage?
What will be my focus when I retire? Mm-hmm.
And do I have to have one focus, or can I have as many focuses as possible?
Will I stretch myself too far?
Or will I? Enough.
Or not far enough?
And maybe for the first time in a person's life after they've retired, they now are the captain of their own ship. And that can be real scary. Because you're now the leader, and what are you going to do with this? Or do you even think you can be a leader? Or do you want to be a leader? Maybe you don't want to retire.
So retirement is a big one. What are some others?
Death of a spouse.
Death of a spouse.
What do you do when you're alone?
That's right. That's right. And what do you do?
Well, for me, I couldn't even drive a car. I had to get busy and drive a car, learn to drive.
You bet. Just the everyday, ordinary routine of life. How to get the groceries without driving.
How to get out of the house.
How to use the checkbook.
Right. Handle the finances.
You bet.
And all that's done to me all at once.
And how did you make your choices? How did you choose what options to follow?
Some good friend took me out and gave me driving lessons. I learned to drive a car.
And didn't you feel good about yourself when you had accomplished that?
Well, sort of, yeah. I think you have to make a choice to survive. Because my husband died and I was left with four small children.
And what, can you mention some of the resources that you used?
First, I wasn't any good at all.
Okay.
And then I got my act together.
Mm-hmm.
Realized I was the one.
And that's difficult. I know that it's difficult. The one thing that I allowed myself to do is to realize that I was going to have to ask for help. And that's very difficult to do for me. Because I like to give, I mean, really, it's difficult to take. But there are people that want to help so badly that if you could come up with anything, I'm sure you found that.
Oh, I have that, lots of friends.
Right, exactly. It makes them feel.
But I never done anything. My husband done everything for me.
Okay, now everything you mean by paying the bills and he worked outside the home?
Yeah.
And you were inside the home?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you were a busy person, but inside.
But didn't know nothing. I didn't even know how to write out a check.
Okay. Right.
Didn't know nothing about handling money.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So someone must have helped you.
Yeah, I learned hard with mistakes.
Mm-hmm. But you learned.
Yeah, when my kids are all grown up and I've remarried.
Mm-hmm.
But it was hard.
Good.
We've talked about retirement. We've talked about death of a spouse. What are some of the other changes in life?
Disabilities.
Disabilities, you bet.
How are you going to maneuver? How are you going to do it?
You bet. And do you even want to do it?
You want to sit and do nothing?
How do you make those choices?
Do it.
How did you decide how to give yourself the pick yourself up by the collar and go on?
Just wanting to get places, being probably too independent. Therefore, it's hard, as you said, to ask for help. I've learned a little bit.
Good. Good. It's very difficult when life changes overnight. One day you can do something, the next day there is no way.
Right.
And either you can sit and crawl in that hole and play ostrich, or you decide that I'm going to do something and you just pick yourself up and go.
Every winter I go through the battle. Am I going to let winter conquer me, or am I going to conquer winter? So I go out. Heck with the snow.
Yeah. And in our own way, each one of us has that battle to conquer, whether it, again, be disability, be retirement, death of a spouse, or death of a child, divorce, whatever it might be. Each one of us faces those things very regularly.
Yeah, I had a very elderly lady in my circle at church, and I remember she once said that if everybody could learn to be humble, and by that she meant accept both gratefully and gracefully any help that anybody offers, that's the greatest thing you can do in life, is to accept it and do not feel guilty or obligated in any way. Because people really want to do that. And possibly over a lifetime, you have done that for someone else too. I think that's true.
Yes. Thanks for sharing that.
I think one of the other changes that come to particularly women is when the children leave home and you are no longer needed. For myself, it kind of happened all at once, that my husband didn't need me. My older children went, as they will, off to college and their own lives. And at the time that that happened, my husband no longer needed me, and I had a 12-year-old child. It was the beginning of the late 60s, early 70s. And if you remember that era, 12-year-old kids didn't need their mothers either. And I went through quite a hectic, traumatic experience at that time. And I was like this lady. I had never worked out of the home. I could drive a car. I was independent. I'd been busy with Campfire for years and years and years. And I had that, but I hadn't had the responsibility of the home myself. I had written checks, but I didn't know how to manage, but the main thing was I didn't know how to go out and get a job. And I had to cope with that. It was 5 years before I felt free enough to relax and go out socially. And get my...
It's not easy to do either. You're scared.
Right, right. But I think that when the children leave and you are no longer needed is a crisis that many people have to think about, because we need to be needed.
So how have you handled that?
Well, I...
She worked.
I went out and went to school for a while and got a job and tried to be a good grandma when that time came.
And you made some positive choices.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
And how do you feel about them?
Those choices, good.
You bet.
Mm-hmm.
You bet. And you can be proud of yourself for picking yourself up. You know, by the bootstraps and going on.
Picking myself up, believe me. Because I was devastated.
You bet.
That had been after 25 years of marriage.
Certainly.
I don't know, at least for the death of, if your husband dies, you know he was taken from you, but a divorce must be a very devastating thing to people. You gotta go on, you might live in the same town and see him with other people. I think that would be terrible.
We all have to pick ourselves up regardless of what the crisis is. We may have lots of friends or acquaintances who are able to assist us, but above and beyond that, there is a loving God who is indeed with us, come heck or high water. And that God does not leave us, period.
I work with people that did not make that choice to pick themselves up. With some of the chronically mentally ill, some of the depression, people that don't make a good choice. It's frustrating at times.
It's interesting how many times God either gives us ideas in dreams or innumerable times during the day for you to pick up on. And we just, or at least I turn my back on, I don't want to pick up on that, and I don't want to do this, or I don't want to do that. And right now I'm flopping and floundering a little bit because I've been retired for 2 years, and I have just laid back and enjoyed staying in bed in the morning, and, you know, after so many years of getting up and so forth, knowing full well the time has come that I must, you know, pick up and get with it, get my act together. I lost my husband with 3 young sons, so I have a 30-year-old son now, saying, of course, he experienced growing up 8 years of age when his dad died, that, and I was single parent. And he'll sit back and say, oh, Mom, you can do it, you know. But that's not exactly what I want to hear. You know, he watched me through these years because I was home for about 4 years, and then I went back to school and got a degree and taught. And he's watched this. He's lived with it, you know. He thinks I can, you know, do almost anything.
Super
but I can't, really.
Super mom.
And so right now I'm, you know, doing some searching.
How many of you can admit to yourselves, even if not out loud, to having felt at some time in your life like, phooey, is this worth it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that a number of people have felt that way. And what seems to happen at those times? I'm wondering if not most of the time, someone doesn't appear in our lives, or something doesn't appear in our lives, which kind of gives us that little oomph to get going again. It may be someone or something that we don't really expect. We may be very surprised to see it. I was sharing with Gloria, I think, yesterday or the day before, that coming up here to Holden was a wonderful experience. I was looking forward to it. But getting here with the deafness and the isolation that that brings, and not getting all the banter, you know, everybody can stand up in the patio area and talk and overhear conversations here and there. I don't hear those. And so there's a sense of isolation. You come into the village, and this place is indeed isolated. We're not very close to much of anything, and certainly not close to the people that, unless we come up with a spouse or a friend that we're very close to. And yet, you know, for me, I somehow came upon someone else in the village that I think I've become fairly close to, and that has made a tremendous difference to me here. And has probably changed my whole perspective of what this place is all about. But someone or something oftentimes comes into our lives just at the right time. Have any of you experienced that? I see heads going. And how fortunate we are. But the point is, we have to make a choice. What are we going to do with that? Are we going to run with it? Are we going to go with it? Or are we going to just kind of let it float, whatever, and not take advantage of it? Yes.
Now, Barbara, what would be the proper choice of words to say to a person who has just lost a spouse? You're at a funeral, and you want to give them words of encouragement, and besides just saying, I'm sorry.
Are you asking me a question? I'd probably hug them.
Yeah, that's the best thing you can do. Don't say nothing, just hug them.
It's too soon to say anything.
I don't think that you can actually say anything wrong. I think you might walk away from a person and feel you've said something foolish or it may sound wrong to you, but there was nothing that was ever said that was wrong to me. Because my idea is that if you, whether you want to send a note or you want to say something verbally to them or you want to hug them or you want to come to their home or you want to say to them, I'm here when you need me, call me. And if they don't call in a few days, you call them or you write to them again. I just don't believe there's anything that can really be said that's wrong because you're not being vindictive, you're not being cruel, you just don't exactly know what to do. And I think on many occasions also people do not do something because they're afraid of what they might do that would be wrong. I think you, as far as I perceive, can go with whatever you feel comfortable doing, but do something.
I'll never forget a note that someone sent me. I lost a little granddaughter, hit and run driver. She's 5 years old. And this friend wrote and said, you have loved deeply, suffered deeply. And I've never forgotten that.
Well, people have a habit of saying that, like when you lose somebody, they'll say, well, you don't have to worry anymore. They're gone up with God. Well, that don't help you when you're hurting.
Well, that's an example of something that is said wrong.
Yeah, they say it to you, you know.
But that's what they feel, that's what they think, because isn't that what we're instructed and taught? That
yeah,
that person's
but
better off.
They go through it, they don't realize what you're going
exactly.
through.
Exactly, exactly. That is.
What
true.
That does, of course, is give this person, that second person, a strange concept of who God is or what God is.
The person who has made the remark?
The person to whom the remark is being
to
made.
To whom the remark is made.
And that's not particularly comforting.
See, my husband had never been sick a day in his life, and he dropped dead of a heart attack at 38.
Yes.
Yeah. Was
I think of those who lose a child, too. Sometimes the remark is made, oh, well, you can have another child. I mean, mm-hmm. that is supposed to be comforting, you know, mm-hmm. and that is not comforting.
Every child is special. You can't replace them.
So sometimes there are remarks that...
You know. I have four, and they're so different, you couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm.
We all have crises in our lives. Laura Lee has had a bundle. I've had a bundle, and I'm sure if each of you is honest, you've all had your own bundles. But what we're, yeah, Laura.
Go ahead and finish your sentence, and then I'll...
Excuse me?
I say, you go ahead and finish. I didn't mean to interrupt your sentence or your
what
thought.
I'm trying to say is that with each of our, with each of the crises in our lives, there are all kinds of options. We sometimes don't think we have them. But I keep coming back to what you said the other night, over and over again. Even if you don't make a choice, you've made your choice. Even if I have done nothing about a situation in my life right now, that means I have done something. I have made a choice not to do something, and that's something I have to live with. And I think that for each of us, whether it has to do with retirement, whether it has to be moving from our own homes into a retirement home or into a nursing home, or if it has to do with families or friends or jobs, whatever it is, we make choices, and we can't say we don't.
I think you also have to bear in mind and really focus on the fact that it takes time.
Okay.
No matter what has happened to you, to honor the fact that you have to go through a process of grief, of anger, of guilt, of a whole lot of things, you can't just all of a sudden make a choice, necessarily. And to...
But even those are choices that we make.
But you have to go through some process before you can make a good choice.
Before you can make a final choice, but
or
even as you go, every part of the process is an option.
There's just some gut things that you really got to let happen.
Yeah.
And you can't deny those and say, I'm going to make a choice right now and deny all that stuff you've got to go through.
No.
Some people do that too. And then they really get into it.
Yeah, later down the road they just
fought really good. A friend of mine whose husband had died, the real estate man was on her door the next day to sell her house for her. And, you know, she thought she'd better make a choice. Not true. She really shouldn't do anything about doing all that stuff.
But the choice is not to make a choice right then. That's still a choice.
But I'm hearing that not making a choice is negative.
Not necessarily.
No.
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 I don't. Is that what the rest of you heard?
No.
No.
Okay.
Because I think sometimes we have to be in the holy.
Mm-hmm. But that too is a choice.
Yes, that's a choice.
And we have that option.
As long as we have an option, it makes a difference too. You see, now if there's debt, you have no choice about that.
The only option then is what to do.
Right. Divorce, sometimes you have no choice about either.
That's correct.
You have a choice for remarriage in many cases. Again, that sometimes brings problems with other, with if there's two families coming together. There's often problems in that, you know, area. But if you have no choice about it, that's a different picture as far as when it's a death.
There's no choice if someone dies.
Right.
But there is a choice in what we do from that point on, or how we think about it, or how we deal with it.
Well, it depends on if you're a strong person, a weak person. I said it depends on if you're a strong person or a weaker person or somebody that had everything done for them like I did. I never even brought groceries. I'd give him the grocery list and he'd go out and get the groceries and bring them home.
Now that did not, though, necessarily make you a weak person.
But I wasn't too strong when he died.
It made you less knowledgeable. It gave you less options.
I felt like I wasn't strong enough to raise four children, you know, because I was left alone with them and I... Mm-hmm.
You were unaware of your strengths.
Well, I learned I got them now.
That's right.
But I mean, it's taken... My husband died in 61. And like I say, I raised the kids till they were 18. Then I remarried.
Right, so you had a great many strengths that were hidden and were
now in this
brought
marriage,
to the fore.
I do everything and pay all the bills. He don't even know what we owe. I do all the stuff that this was a lot of first.
You made the
I
choice.
In a hard road.
But I'm sure you feel good about yourself now for the ways in which you've grown.
I've been going to therapy, and I told my neighbor the other day, a real close friend, I says, you know, for the first time in my life, I says, I love myself. And she says, good for you, Lily.
Wonderful.
But I do. I before I felt inferior about things. Now I feel good.
Right. An idea that I have that was given to me by a psychology instructor is that if you can envision yourself sitting on your porch swing when you're 90, and what do you want to see that you've accomplished, done, been a part of now that you're 90? And what it is doing for me is that I'm half 90. So if God and I decide that I can be here for 45 more years, what do I want to do in this next time? For those of you who have 15, 20, 25 more years, what do you wish to do or to be or to become? Rather than sitting back at 90 and thinking, look what I didn't do. So that gives me more options and choices. And I believe in having as many options available to myself as possible. Then I may make choices from those options. My choices will not necessarily nor very often be anyone else's choices, but they're mine. I also believe that God has given each of us our own drum. And with that drum, I am, as I mentioned prior, with God, creating a life that's mine. It's not easy to go along with my own drum many times. I don't live in the same city as my family anymore. My children are gone now, which is fine. For a year I lived with a cat I didn't like, and I finally eliminated her. She didn't fit with my drumming. These are choices and thoughts that I've grown with. So it's like I'm thinking, if I can introduce anyone to the possibility that there are possibilities, and that God is so full of wonderment and opportunities that it's just beyond your belief. You have no idea what's out there, what God really wants for us.
We have plans, and when they fall through, I have had plans for 2 years that fell through last Wednesday up here at Holden Village. They were to begin on January 1st of next year. They were everything except signed on the bottom line. Last Wednesday I received a letter that they were all kaput. Up here, what can you do about it? There's no telephone, you can't make any phone calls. By the time I'd write a letter, you know, what difference does it make? So what do? You say, okay, God, I guess maybe my plans have to change. I still don't know what I'm going to do January 1st of next year. I have no idea.
Celebrate.
But since last Wednesday until now, my mind is open. And there are lots of options. Or at least there are several that I know of. Who knows? Who knows what's in store for us? And yet we have to be open. We don't have to be, but we can choose to be open. And to say, okay, that, I guess, isn't going to work. Now let's see what else we can go in another direction and still be positive and try and make something good. Make, in the trite statement, make lemonade out of our lemons, you know?
I was just going to say, I think that the idea of the choice must go back to Eve, though, don't you think?
She go back
to Eve. Oh. I mean, God didn't just say, you know, here she had the choice whether to or not to. So as long as we have a choice, you know, we have something to say about it. We can choose. But when we have no choice, when we have no part of the decision that is made for us, then that's striking something basic in us as far as we didn't get a choice about this. My husband died on me, you know. I can be angry. Or my husband divorced me, you know, or whatever the situation might be, because I had no choice about it. And I'm just throwing that out. Is that possible that that's basic?
I had no choice that another decision was made on my behalf.
Right.
But I do have a decision and a choice on what I'm going to do about it. I can feel lousy. I can say for 2 years I've planned that. I've known I was going to do that. I have been positive about it, which I have been. I got the letter, I walked from the post office to about here, which is what? Half a block. And I was feeling crummy. This put it bluntly. I got from here to Shell A1, and I was feeling a whole lot better and thinking, wonder what other options are out there. Was it the next day or something else? I was talking to Laurie and I said, do you know what kind of option was presented to me today? There was an option. And it wasn't 2 days later and somebody else presented an option to think about. Those are two options I hadn't considered. I have no idea whether either one of them is going to be the direction in which I choose to go. But there are options that were not there last Wednesday when I received the letter. And there are probably more when I get out of here. But the point is, what is important is what we do with those options when decisions are forced upon us.
When the door is closed, look for the window.
Your hand was in the way.
When the door is closed, to look for the window.
Yeah, amen. Amen. Any other contributions? Such a silent group. It has been an hour, I guess.
It has.
Very close. Well,
no, go you. Finish up and all, maybe.
Bill.
Yeah. Well, when she was seen, when the door was closed and looked through the window, well, when I was hearing that lady saying that, excuse me, her husband was saying that she didn't let her do anything. Well, her husband didn't let her do anything because he felt that he was being too, I wouldn't say cruel, not enough independent and so she could help herself in her ways, what she felt that she wanted to do. And but it was nice that her husband could help her little by little. And but it seems like people, when they're going that way, when her husband didn't let her write a check or get the groceries, he felt that he was kind of running away from things. Not giving her the love and working together.
We all have different ways of handling things, don't we?
Yeah, different ways of handling things.
And we all can make some choices from that, whether to allow people to tell us what to do and whether to accept that or not. I think that it is late tonight, but if we can remember one thing, that in whatever crises we may face, even if it's just in a day-to-day routine thing, whether it's to get up in the morning or to eat breakfast or to go to a session here or go on a hike or whatever, we always have options, whether it be in the death of a spouse, the death of a child, regardless of what the crisis might be, retirement, whatever. We always, always have options, whether we do anything about them or not, or how we deal with them is a choice that is left up to us. And if we make a choice, that's fine. If we don't make a choice, we're also making a choice. And if we can remember that and be responsible not only for our own behavior but for our own actions, I think we'll feel much more confident, particularly knowing that God is with us. Amen. Totally. Always. And that we certainly are not alone in whatever those choices are that we make.
In these crises, I think that we always pray that God help us to make the proper choice, and usually something comes along.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I concur with you totally, and I think also that that you are right, that God and you and God and I are making choices together. And there are going to be times when the choices that you make are not going to be someone else's choices. But I think as long as it's been concurred with God and it's what I feel needs to be done at the time, then I must go ahead and make the choice that I need to make.
There are always times when people say to us, you should do this, you should do that.
So
we have to be responsible for our own decisions and making those choices on our own.